Good morning. My name is Kirk, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Q412 earnings release conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Richard Herring, Executive Vice President, Chief Administrative Officer, and Corporate Secretary for First Pac Trust Bancorp, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's fourth quarter 2012 earnings conference call. With me on the call today is First Pac Trust Bancorp's Chief Executive Officer, Stephen Sugarman. Also on the call and available to answer questions later is our CFO, Ronald Nicholas Jr. Today's conference call is being recorded, and a copy of the recording will be available later on the company's investor relations website. Before I turn it over to Steve, I want to remind everyone that, as always, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and based on our view, best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those elements can change as the world changes. Please interpret them in that light. This forward-looking statement in today's 8-K filing also applies to our comments today. That document is available on our firstpactrustbancorp.com website under Investor Relations, as other 8-Ks and filings are also there. We will have time for a Q&A at the end of the presentation, and now I'd like to turn it over to our CEO, Steve Sugarman.
Thanks, Richard. Good morning. Before we discuss fourth quarter earnings, I wanted to begin today's call by recognizing some of the newer members of our executive team and making some observations relating to our broader organization. First, I want to mention Ron Nicholas and Lonnie Robinson, our CFO and Chief Accounting Officer, respectively. Ron and Lonnie have been with us for several months now and have been tirelessly enhancing the efficiencies and capabilities of our financial group, which has been one of our highest priorities. During the past few months, they've made enormous strides in terms of hiring a top-notch team in Irvine, transitioning our audit firm from Crowe Horwath to KPMG, and enhancing our strategic planning and reporting capabilities. We expect this initiative to result in overall cost savings and to help expedite the timing of our financial reporting. And while there continues to be a tremendous amount of work to do to complete our year-end audit and 10-K process, the company's transition to KPMG continues to be on track, thanks in large part to the efforts of employees throughout our organization and the resources that KPMG has dedicated to us in this process. In addition, Bob Franco has, in the fourth quarter, taken the helm as CEO of Pacific Trust Bank, as well as Beach Business Bank, our two banking subsidiaries. I've also been pleased to see the addition of some of the extremely talented executives from Beach Business Bank to the PAC Trust team as well. For instance, Melissa Lamfrey has joined PAC Trust as the CAO. Melissa Rickabaugh has joined to oversee operations in BSA. Ray Vidalma is serving as our Chief Credit Officer. And Greg Sachs is focusing on the implementing operational efficiencies throughout the organization. These additions to our team are already resulting in a stronger organization, and changes to our executive team are largely complete pending the closing of the Private Bank of California acquisition. We believe our organization and management team is strong, and it continues to work on behalf of our depositors, investors, and regulators. We've also made a number of additions to our residential lending division. This process has been led by Jeff Siebold and resulted in the creation of what we believe is a formidable team in terms of production, compliance, and risk. We understand the need to have a strong system of risk controls and compliance procedures to ensure compliance with all risks and regulations relating to residential mortgage lending. However, as a company, we believe that excellence and compliance in the residential lending field can result in superior financial returns. During the fourth quarter of 2012, Mission Hills Mortgage Bankers closed approximately $351 million in loans. Finally, I want to mention Richard Herring, Galen Anderson, and Chang Liu, all of whom have helped to build the organization since early in 2011, and each of whom continues to work tirelessly to help implement the strategic plan we are executing on. In short, I'm very excited to have in place a tremendous team that has the experience, capability, and tenacity to execute on our shareholders. Before I turn it over to Ron Nicholas to discuss fourth quarter earnings, I want to highlight a couple of key achievements the company has enjoyed over the past several months and some of the unique costs associated with those achievements. First, the company recently announced the launch of its warehouse lending team, which has been building that business over a several-month period. We also recently announced the launch of our corresponding lending division. Third, during the fourth quarter, we've integrated the management teams across our two banking subsidiaries and started the process of integrating the boards of our two banking subsidiaries. Fourth, we've announced and the opening of 12 new residential lending locations, primarily throughout California. Fifth, we've launched and began to grow a specialty finance team. Sixth, during the fourth quarter, we raised senior debt of approximately $52 million to help finance our growth and the pending acquisitions. And lastly, we completed several regulatory filings, including filings relating to the PBOC merger. With respect to the costs associated with some of these and other parts of our strategic plan, it's important to note that the addition of the new hires in our residential lending team has increased salaries in that group by north of $300,000 per month. And as is the case with residential lending, that's usually a leader prior to the revenues coming in. Number two, management's taken an increase in overall ALLL of over $2 million. Third, in the fourth quarter, we made a reversal of approximately $400,000 of bargain purchase gain that was realized in the third quarter as a true-up. Fourth, we've incurred approximately $880,000 of costs associated with initial reduction in force efforts. Fifth, we've incurred some duplicative audit fees for the transition to KPMG. Sixth, we've incurred some duplicative finance team costs as part of the transition of our finance team to Irvine and running the existing team in parallel. And seventh, we continue to have incurred some legal expenses due to the CMG litigation, those expenses which have not yet been reimbursed by insurance. Finally, in the fourth quarter, we also saw an increase in classified credits in our portfolio. This was in large part due to the delinquency of a $5 million single-family residential mortgage. I will note that subsequent to the end of the year, we have put over $7.5 million of classified credits under contract to sell at book value, and those are secured by non-refundable deposits to acquirers. With that, I'll now turn it over to Ron Nicholas to discuss the financial results for the fourth quarter of 2012.
Thank you, Steve, and good morning. For the next few minutes, I will be directing my comments to the financial statements that accompany the press release, starting with the income statement. During the fourth quarter in 2012, the company reported a net loss of $3.2 million, or approximately 30 cents per share, compared with $5.6 million for the fourth quarter of 2011 and 52 cents per share. That was a $5.6 million loss. Taking a closer look at the key components on the income statement, starting with the revenue, revenue came in as expected with net interest margin at just under $15 million. Our net interest margin was 3.77% for the quarter, compared with 3.38% for the fourth quarter of 2011. Obviously, the two acquisitions of Beach and Gateway contributed positively to the growth in our net interest income. Also included was approximately $300,000 of additional interest expense related to the additional debt of $52 million that Steve mentioned just a moment ago. During the quarter, the company also added $3.5 million of reserves to its ALLL, raising the percentage of ALLL to 1.51% for the total loans attributable to that ALLL. The company felt that this was prudent in further fortifying the loss reserves for its loan portfolio. And as Steve mentioned, during the quarter, we had $1.4 million in net charge-offs, so our ALLL went from $12.4 million to $14.4 million, or a $2 million increase. Taking a closer look at non-interest income, as Steve mentioned, the company realized approximately $14.4 million of mortgage banking revenues on $351 million of originations. That included $1.9 million of origination fees, and the company achieved a gain on sale of 3.67%, that's a net gain on sale, on $345 million of loan sales. In addition, the company opportunistically sold mortgage loans from its portfolio of loans, approximately $50 million, and also realized a small gain on the sale of SBA loans of $2.2 million, that was UPB. Together, those contributed roughly about $800,000 in non-interest income. As Steve mentioned, we adjusted downwardly the bargain purchase gain, approximately $429,000. There were numerous adjustments to the bargain purchase gain regarding the items, in particular some valuations with the acquired loan portfolio. Taking a closer look now at non-interest expense of $28.9 million. First and foremost, that reflected a full quarter's worth of the mortgage origination business. And obviously, that included higher commissions of approximately $4 million for the quarter. In addition, our staffing increased from 12/31/2011 from roughly about 150 people to over 500 people at 12/31/2012. So obviously, that contributed significantly to the overall staffing and personnel expense increases. The company also booked, as Steve mentioned, just under $900,000 for executive severance and other merger-related personnel costs. Finally, as professional fees, which were down from the prior quarter, but still reflected a high, were still high, reflecting both the transition to the new accounting firm and other professional fees, as Steve mentioned, related to the mergers and the completed acquisitions. Lastly, with respect to the income statement, the tax expense for the year was near zero, which meant that we realized a $1.5 million tax expense for the fourth quarter. This adjustment, this year-to-date adjustment, reflected an adjustment to the deferred tax position, primarily for the impact of the fourth quarter. During the quarter, the company hired an outside tax firm to handle its tax management process, including the provisioning, planning, and compliance on a go-forward basis. Turning now to the balance sheet, a couple of items worth highlighting. Total assets grew, as indicated by the press release, of almost $700 million, predominantly driven by the Beach and Gateway acquisitions, with almost $600 million of that coming from the loan portfolio and loans held for sale on a combined basis. Cash grew with the additional debt offering by over $50 million. And, of course, the goodwill and CDI, core deposit intangible, came from both acquisitions as well. On the liability side, deposits grew by over $500 million with the two acquisitions. And, of course, the total debt, as highlighted on the balance sheet here, just under $85 million. That's the $33 million that was issued in April and the additional $52 million in December. Finally, equity finished at just under $189 million, up from $184 million at December 31st, 2011. With that, I'm going to turn it back to Steve.
Thanks, Ron. As we look forward, the company is focused on closing its previously announced acquisition of the Private Bank of California. We continue to project the closing to occur during the second quarter of 2013. On a personal note, I've been thrilled by the cooperation and contributions of the executives at the Private Bank, which have helped us facilitate the planning and integration process of the Private Bank with Beach Business Bank. In particular, David Misch, Richard Smith, Nick Zappia, and Suzanne Dondenville have each made significant contributions to the process, with Suzanne taking a strong leadership role in developing and overseeing the working committee on behalf of Private Bank. We believe we are in very good shape to close this acquisition effectively upon receipt of all necessary approvals. We expect that following the closing of the acquisition of the Private Bank, the company will pursue the consolidation of our two banking subsidiaries, Pacific Trust Bank and the Private Bank, into a single integrated banking platform. With that, let me turn it over to Robert Franco, the CEO of Beach Business Bank and Pacific Trust Bank and president of our company, to discuss some of the key initiatives for 2013.
Thanks, Steve. In 2013, we focused on three key initiatives. First, integrating our banking platforms together efficiently. Second, building a top-level commercial banking franchise in Southern California. And third, building our residential lending platform. First, we've spent significant time making plans for the integration of our three banks. We expect to merge Beach and the Private Bank together in Q2, which will allow us to create a very powerful Southern California commercial banking platform. As you can see from the deposit mix on the balance sheet at 12/31/2012 compared to the prior year, there's already been a very positive change in the deposit mix. We expect that mix will improve even more dramatically with the addition of the Private Bank. Later in the year, we expect to merge all three banks into a single bank. In planning for that combination of our three banks, we've used what we call a best athlete strategy for each position in our organization. We're fortunate to have many strong athletes in our lineup, and Steve has mentioned many of those individuals by name. I can tell you personally that it is a joy to me to come to work every day with employees who are energized and ready and able to grow this bank. In addition to our commercial banking platform, we've moved carefully but forcefully to build a very robust residential lending platform. We were fortunate to acquire Mission Hills Mortgage, and we've added on to that business with an outstanding team of residential real estate professionals, focusing particular efforts on Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego. But we've also had the good fortune to hire talent in Northern California. As you heard Steve say, we started by building the foundation with solid people, policies, and procedures, all designed to allow us to scale this business. In order to realize efficiencies as we bring all of this together, we've mirrored the membership of the boards of the directors of our banks. This allows consistency in ideas and dedication to the same objectives. Because the residential platform is building, we've been able to reduce staff at the bank level while building staff at the mortgage business, allowing us to begin our priority initiatives even though our banks have not yet merged together. We expect to realize more meaningful cost savings later in the year after these mergers are complete. And now I'd like to turn this back over to Steve to continue.
Thanks, Bob. In conclusion, First Pac Trust has made some important strides during the fourth quarter, including in the areas of capital management and earnings power of the franchise. With respect to capital, the closing of our issuance of senior notes during the fourth quarter, we believe puts our capital position in a strong place that is able to support our strategic plan throughout 2013. With respect to management, our best athlete approach to building our management team has caused us to need to make some difficult decisions, but has resulted in a strong and dedicated leadership team. Lastly, with respect to earnings, from the cost side, the severance and operational efficiencies that the company incurred and expects to incur during the first part of 2013 will result in increased profitability. From the revenue side, the additions to our residential lending platform and launch of the warehouse lending group will result in necessary enhancements to the company's earning power. With that, we're prepared to open up the conference for questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And your first question comes from the line of Brett Rabatin. Your line is open. Brett Rabatin, your line is open. And again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And your next question comes from the line of Andrew Leash. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions.
Hey, Andrew.
Okay, there you are.
Yeah.
I just want to just dig into this $5 million mortgage loan that went bad. When was that added?
Are you talking about the single family credit?
Yeah.
This was a loan that went delinquent during the fourth quarter.
Went delinquent in the fourth. Well, it was put on non-accrual in November, Andrew.
No, I mean, when was it originated?
Oh, this is a legacy loan from years ago.
Okay, so it wasn't one that was added recently or anything like that.
No,
2007 or 2008.
Yeah, this okay. Loan's been on our books for quite some time. It's, we believe, well-secured kind of from the value of the property, but the borrower ran into some stresses that caused him to be unable to keep the loan performing.
Okay. And I guess how are you looking at, with the build in the reserve? Because, I mean, it's bounced around from one quarter to the next for several quarters. And I'm just kind of curious, like, are you thinking now to just keep it more at a consistent level?
I'd just say that this is the first full quarter that this management team's been in place. So, you know, I think that we took a look at our ALLL and the methodology that we thought was appropriate and in conjunction with our auditors and our new team. And we set ALLL where we thought appropriate.
Okay. And then just one more question. The addition of the warehouse lending team, have you taken a look at possible implications of higher capital requirements on warehouse lines compared to where they currently stand?
I mean, yes, when we go into a new category like this, it's usually the end of a pretty long process before we make an announcement of it as we did this last week. So, for instance, in this case for warehouse lending, we hired a consulting firm of Garrett McCauley to help advise us on this. We also staffed up the group about a quarter in advance and have been carrying their costs to build the policies, procedures, business plan, and capabilities that we want. And just at the most recent board meeting, with the completion of the startup phase, we received authorization to move forward and launch the program, and we expect to fund the first loan in March. But This is a process that started and was in place throughout the fourth quarter.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Gary Tenner. Your line is open.
Thanks, guys. Good morning. I just had a question just to follow up on the warehouse business a little bit and just on the expense side. You mentioned on the call that the increases on the residential lending side added around $300,000 of expense per month. Is the mortgage warehouse guys you brought on a month in advance in that number, or is that on top of it? And, you know, can you look at the personnel cost run rate in the fourth quarter and give us a sense of, with the additional guys you have queued up to come on board in the first quarter, where that number might go in the near term?
Well, that number you're referencing is primarily attributable to the growth in our residential lending division, and in particular, we have hired or launched about a dozen new lending teams. As you'll recall, we have approximately 25 LPOs, and so there's been a substantial kind of increase in talented production folks. We've also, alongside of production, have invested in underwriters, compliance, quality control, and other kind of support aspects for residential lending. Those numbers began towards the tail end of the fourth quarter, and so they'll be more fully reflected in the first quarter. That being said, generally speaking, in the residential lending group, when you bring on production teams, it'll take 60 to 90 days for a new pipeline to fill up and start closing. So, you know, although the producers did not all come in the same day, on an individual basis, you tend to have a 2 to 3 quarter lag between some carrying costs and then production.
And Gary, this is Ron. Just to amplify a little bit more of what Steve was highlighting there, you might a good rule of thumb to use with respect to the cost related to the mortgage business is the total all-in cost, roughly around 3% of originations. I would expect that number to float up a little bit here in the first quarter, as Steve indicated, with the expansion of the program and the business itself. And then that number to start to come back down again as we move into the second quarter when the seasonality of the mortgage business begins to come more into play and all of the expansion starts to take a foothold in the marketplace.
With respect to your question around the warehouse lending division, you know, that's less than five people, and they've been part of the cost structure since early in the fourth quarter.
Okay, that's helpful. And on that warehouse business, if we just ask a follow-up question on that, you know, where have you kind of set sights in terms of having that part of the business grow, whether it be a percentage of the overall loan portfolio, you know, or versus capital? Where are you kind of positioning that business relative to your overall franchise?
Well, that business will grow in conjunction with, it will grow independently, but also in conjunction with the correspondent lending program that we also just rolled out, which will enable us to provide kind of a full suite of warehouse and correspondent services to independent mortgage originators. We would expect that the warehouse lending program will remain less than 10% of our total assets in the near term. And while we think that it's a business that has an opportunity to run with some scale and that it can ramp up relatively quickly, we view it as a complementary business on our overall balance sheet, and so we'd expect that it will stay kind of, at least in 2013, under 10% of assets.
All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Bryce Rowe. Your line is open.
Thanks. Yeah, just a handful of topics here. You guys have obviously made some big hires on the mortgage side. And just to help size up what the revenue and expense will be associated with that, you know, you've provided some information on that so far. What kind of origination volume are you expecting from a base case perspective? I mean, you guys did, $350 million here in the fourth quarter. You've got multiple new lending teams. Can you talk about what that's going to mean from an origination perspective?
Sure. You know, we've been very fortunate and very pleased with the acquisition of Gateway Business Bank and Mission Hills Mortgage. And it's important to note that, you know, although we saw the departure of the president of Mission Hills Mortgage during the fourth quarter, the regional managers and the production groups and the overall team has remained in place, and we're very happy with the quality of the individuals and the quality of that business. That being said, we have made a focused effort to build upon that platform. I'm very happy with the success as far as identifying and attracting some of the top professionals in the mortgage space over the last several months. You know, when you look at the first quarter, you're probably not going to see a significant change. There's seasonality, which tends to affect the first couple months of the year each year, and also there's a ramp period. So, you know, my expectation in the first quarter is not going to be a material departure, and we've been spending a lot of time kind of onboarding and building up our systems. That being said, you know, if you just kind of look at it from a location perspective, we're adding about 50% additional locations, and what you'll find about where we're adding locations for retail mortgage origination is they tend to be in a little bit of primary kind of cities and kind of higher volume locations. So you'd probably expect that each of the locations, when they get fully ramped up, will originate a little bit higher than our average originations per location today. That said, we're also diversifying and making the mortgage origination platform a bit more robust. So it's not just the retail locations, but with the launch of the correspondent division and the enhancements we've been making to the consumer direct and wholesale divisions, with some key hires there, you know, we're hopeful to see that result in increased origination volume too. So, you know, on a run rate basis in the fourth quarter, I think we're at about $115 million. You'll see, you know, as we move forward, you know, with market conditions staying consistent, you'd see a pretty significant increase in origination volumes.
Okay. And then on that line, Steve, I mean, if you're building the mortgage company for the mortgage side of the house the way that you are, presumably from a total revenue perspective or even balance sheet to some certain extent, the mortgage is going to represent a fairly large piece of the company's revenue stream. How do you guys think about that in terms of that being a valuable piece, or how investors value a mortgage earning stream relative to a commercial bank earning stream?
I mean, we look at the depositors and we want to serve and the business that we want to have, and you know, we think that having a strong retail presence in communities throughout Southern California is a very good way to be able to service depositor clients on the commercial bank side as well, and up the coast into San Francisco and beyond. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, the markets will kind of tell us how they want to value these two businesses, but we think that they're highly complementary to one another in terms of servicing those clients. We think that there's real opportunity in both businesses, but speaking of residential, there's real opportunity for a bank our size. And with the changes going on in the landscape, both on the agency side, with regard to this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and with regard to implications for independent mortgage bankers out there, we think there's just a great opportunity to prudently you know, drive a lot of earnings power to our shareholders, and so we're going to do that.
Okay, a couple more questions. One, just wanted to get a sense for the loan growth in the quarter. You guys mentioned having sold $50 million of residential mortgages, so that would put on a gross basis fairly healthy loan growth for the quarter. Can you talk about where that loan growth came from?
Sure. Look, during 2012, I think that we grew over 65% of both assets and liabilities. And so I'm not sure that kind of rate of growth is something that people, you know, we tend to be, you know, growing at a good clip, and especially with the private bank coming on, we're also growing at a good clip. Part of your question is answered by the fact that there's a prudent rate that we'd like to grow, and there's a prudent way to build these businesses in a scalable way. And sometimes we'll be selling assets and buying assets. But, you know, during the fourth quarter, I'd suggest that, you know, that there was a little bit of a deep breath. We had significant changes to and enhancements to kind of the management group. We've also kind of made significant decisions with regard to some of the efficiencies we want to wring out. And, you know, we're not looking to stress the organization, you know, unnecessarily with just a desire to make sure that growth happens uniformly from quarter to quarter. That being said, I'm not sure that I've heard much criticism that this management team or this bank hasn't been a strong grower.
No, and I'm not trying to insinuate that at all. I'm just trying to understand where within the loan portfolio you did see some loan growth.
Sure. On the residential side, you know, the impediment to growth is just kind of our you know, is primarily our decision of what's kind of prudent growth. You know, with the platform we have, that's a pipeline that we can access pretty regularly and predictably. With regard to CRE, we continue to see positive originations out of Cheng Lu's group. That being said, with the integration and joining of Beach Business Bank and Bob Franco into the family, we've also been trying to enhance that group in terms of its scalability and in terms of the credits that we're targeting. There's probably more news to come on that front in the coming months. But, you know, we continue to see very strong volumes there, but there is an initiative on pace there. You know, those are probably the two areas that our asset growth really came from in the fourth quarter.
Okay, thanks. And then last question on capital. Obviously, you'll deploy some capital here with the Private Bank of California deal. Wondering if there's any thought at the board level to maybe focus on a stock buyback as opposed to a cash dividend, with the stock now trading at 80%, give or take, of tangible book value.
Yeah. Look, we think about all those things. You know, given our active strategic initiatives, it becomes a bit of a difficult thing, you know, just to get an insider trading window open becomes difficult enough, let alone a window for things such as stock buybacks. As you know, the board had approved a stock buyback plan that's still out there about a year ago. You know, in the context of pending transactions, it implicates all of those types of considerations. So we look at it, but you know, at this point, if shareholders are looking to own a larger percentage of the bank, you know, I assume that they could take their dividend and accomplish the same thing.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jackie Sharma. Your line is, sorry, Shamara, your line is open.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Not to beat the dead expense horse, but I just want to get a sense of kind of where severance costs landed during the quarter and also what expenses within your structure are directly relatable to M&A, to the extent you can give a little bit more color on that.
Sure, Jackie. This is Ron. The severance-related costs were roughly about $500,000 of that $880,000. And then there were other merger-related incentives that were paid out also during the fourth quarter related to the two acquisitions. So all told, it came to a total, if you will, merger-related personnel costs of that $880,000. To your latter question, I would say that, you know, given, as Steve indicated, there was quite a bit of noise. Our professional fees were down, but at the end of the day, you know, we probably had in the several hundred thousands of dollars.
Okay. And then there's also the addition of the $429,000 reversal of the BPO. That was captured in other non-interest income, right?
Yeah, the bargain purchase gain, yes. Yeah, so that went from 12.1, where it stood at the end of 9.30, to 11, what is it, 11.7. At the end of 12/31,
okay.
And that is still subject to further adjustments over the next quarter or so.
But that true up adjustment happened during the fourth quarter. It wasn't
that
a
is
restatement,
correct.
Right? Okay.
No, absolutely sure not.
As you may know, with these bargain purchase gains, each quarter for the year following the closing of an acquisition, You're supposed to look back at the date and assess the information you then have in hand as of that date and true up the final bargain purchase gain. So
yes.
That happened in the fourth quarter, and we'd expect that we'll go through at least the same exercise. Whether or not there's any impact or result, we don't know, but we'll go through the same exercise for the next three quarters.
Yes. I'm completely understand the true-up process. I just want to make sure that I'm not taking that out of future quarter's earnings, given that it was potentially just a one-time thing in the quarter. And then I also just wanted to touch base on taxes a little bit. I'm in no way a tax accountant, so just if you have any color on where we could look to see the tax rate going forward and then where the valuation allowance stood at the end of the quarter against the DTA.
Sure, Jackie. To your latter question, the DTA is sitting right at $7.5 million, approximately. Yeah, and although the audit, we're still working through the final I dotting and T crossing of the audit, so it's not complete just yet. But that's where we're sitting at this point in time. The tax to where our tax rate is going, if you will, it's a little bit tricky because it's a as you know, it's a timing of in terms of when we start to realize taxable income. Suffice to say that I think that the company is going to be in a very good position to mitigate any tax expense for the foreseeable future at this point in time.
So the reversal and true-up of the valuation allowance would result, I just want to make sure I'm understanding that correctly, it would result in essentially a 0% tax rate on income?
Yeah, certainly for 1231, that is correct, yes.
Okay. And then also just to touch base on the developments in the mortgage banking, just so that I can understand all the comments and what everyone else has been talking about. So it sounds like you're in the build-up mode, which is completely understandable given what you've added to the department over the last couple of months, and that essentially what we can expect is expenses normalizing, perhaps going up as a full quarter run rate, and then after a pause as lenders get their feet wet, we should see that income line item ramp up over the next year.
I think that's fair. I'd just add, you know, when we're looking at our subsidiary businesses, we are looking at the kind of expense item separately between the residential lending group and the commercial banking group. And so you should see continued, costs associated with reductions on the commercial banking side, and kind of increased synergies over there and expense reductions. On the residential side, you know, the costs that come on are structured in a way that are intended to be as variable as possible, since that business has a bit more volatility to it. We are very pleased with the folks that we've brought on board. How you characterized the cash flows is probably correct. And to the extent that the business continues to perform and grow, you'll see the expenses grow also, because they tend to be linked to productivity in large part. And to the extent that our cash flows at some point would steady out or shrink, the expenses would probably go through the same pattern.
Okay, great. Thank you for the color. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thanks, Jackie.
Your next question comes from the line of Brett Rabatin. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Can you guys hear me?
We hear you this time, Brett.
Okay. All right. Sorry about earlier. Wanted to ask about Mission Hills. Could you guys go back and talk maybe a little bit about purchase versus refi volume in the fourth quarter, and then just in terms of production, as you see it so far in the first quarter, kind of how things have been trending with a decline and a little bit of a decline anyway in refi across the market.
Yeah, I'll give you a high level thing, then I'll let Ron dig into the numbers. But Mission Hills Mortgage Bankers had two primary businesses. One was the retail brand, LPO locations, and then the other one was a consumer direct group. The consumer direct's primarily refi. The retail is mostly purchase business. And so that's kind of one thing to keep in mind structurally. Secondly, you typically see some seasonality to this business, in particular around the January-February time period. So, we continue to be very pleased with the performance, in light of kind of how the run rates would expect to fall out. So with that, I'll turn over to Ron for the specifics.
So Brett, historically, I think Mission Hills has been predominantly a purchase organization. I think it's been largely in the 70% kind of range, 70-30 purchase to refi. That said, as Steve indicated, with the recent the seasonality that you typically see in the fourth quarter, we've seen the purchase come down to more of a 55%, so a 55-45 mix through these winter months. We expect that number to probably stabilize or even go back up a little bit on the purchase side as we head into the spring buying season, and pretty much stabilize and be fairly consistent, maybe in that 60-40 kind of range.
Okay. And then I think you discussed it briefly, but I kind of missed the numbers. Could you talk about the gain on sale margins in the fourth quarter and just kind of how you see those trending as well?
Sure. So in the fourth quarter, the net gain on sale was 3.67%. I think, as Steve mentioned earlier, I think in this marketplace, we would continue to see that number to be in that 3.5% to 4% range as long as market conditions remain as we stand here today.
And if anything, we saw just a slight fade, as you typically do at year end. But we expect those numbers to remain fairly consistent as we move forward.
Okay. And then wanted to ask about the PBOC deal that you're closing in the second quarter. Can you give us any update on how much tangible book dilution per share you're looking at today versus maybe when the deal was announced? And then just kind of capital ratios, how you're going to manage those post the transaction, sort of where you might be at the close.
As far as what the ultimate impact is on things like tangible book value, you're going to have to wait till we get closer. We'll provide you that guidance when we get it closed. But you have, the purchase metrics haven't changed. As you know, 50% of the consideration is, or approximately 50% of the consideration is cash, and then approximately 50% of the consideration is in common stock of BANC, with the stock carrying a value of $12 a share for purposes of the acquisition. PBOC continues to run its business, and we've been pleased with kind of the progress they've had in their business since the transaction was initially announced, and are anticipating and already see opportunities where both of our businesses will benefit from their integration with one another.
Okay. And then just lastly, I was wondering if you guys could maybe lay out some profitability goals or kind of how we should think about 2013 or 14 as you guys get all of this stuff integrated and running at full speed, kind of what you see as a potential in this low rate environment.
Sure. Although we don't give kind of earnings guidance going forward, we have suggested some key metrics that are a focus of ours. Within the commercial banking division, we're focused on bringing our efficiency ratios to a reasonable run rate basis. And we continue to believe that we're on track to get there by the end of 2013. So that's number one. Secondly, what we're trying to measure ourselves against is the bank that we're trying to build here, which is a premier bank and focused mostly on Southern California, servicing kind of the attractive markets out here. With that, we've been pretty clear what our long-term objectives are and the value of our franchise and its earnings power if we build to those objectives, which include kind of targets in terms of scale, in terms of footprint, and in terms of margins. We're a little bit less focused on, where transaction costs fall from one quarter to the other, and more focused on whether we're building those components to the business, which will allow it to be a very valuable platform going forward. And on that end, I've been very pleased with the hard work of the team and some of those initiatives that we're kind of completing that we've been working hard on the last few months, including the specialty finance group, the warehouse lending group, building out the correspondent lending platform, and kind of revamping a little bit our CRE orientation. So those are some things that each of the business units will model from the ground up, make sure that they meet our return objectives, and make sure they're on pace. And when we look out over 2013, what I'm going to be looking for is, as you move through the year, you'll start to see a little bit less noise in the numbers until we find another acquisition that introduces more noise. But you'll see the noise kind of being resolved as we get out towards the back half of the year. And you'll also see some of the investments we've been making in teams and in programs start to result in the revenues coming in. And the early signs that we're seeing about, you know, actually realizing those revenues are leave me very optimistic.
Okay, great. Thanks for the color.
Your next question comes from the line of a participant whose information we're unable to gather. If you press star 1 to ask a question, please state your name and ask your question. Your line is open.
This is Don Worthington of Raymond James.
Hey, Don.
Hey, Don.
Hi. Just a couple, I guess, follow-ups. In terms of C&I lending during the quarter, how much was there in that category? I know you talked about residential and CRE, but how things are moving on the just kind of the business lending front?
I'd say that the C&I was flat in to maybe down a little bit in terms of portfolio. We are realizing new commitments, and so we think that there's going to be some increase. It's a very aggressive pricing model out there, as I'm sure that's not news to anybody on this call. And it does not make sense, in our view, to be too aggressive on pricing, but even worse, to be too aggressive on structure. So we've not gone out very far on a limb on all of that. But we think that there is good good activity in that marketplace. We see commitments starting to be drawn down. So we think over this coming year that that will be a good area, but the fourth quarter was not a growth area in C&I at all.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. And then TDRs that are performing that, you know, would be in addition to the NPAs that you had in the press release. What's the current balance of those?
Don, we can try and get you that number. At this point, I'm not sure I have it off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And your next question again comes from the line of a participant whose information we are unable to gather. If you have pressed star 1 to ask a question, please state your name and ask your question. Your line is open.
Hi, Brett Ballum from Fig Partners. Can you hear me?
Hey, Brett.
Hey. I know you guys have been really focused on integration right now, but would you mind commenting on the M&A environment from your perspective? Have you seen much of a change lately in the opportunities available and relative to maybe what you've envisioned, say, 6 months or a year ago?
Sure. Well, we're seeing is a robust M&A environment that that's very encouraging. You know, the M&A decisions right now tend to be about opportunity cost analysis for us and less about ability to do M&A. You're seeing the number of targets who have a willingness or a desire to sell seems to increase on a run rate basis. At the same time, the number of potential acquirers, excluding kind of small merger of equal type candidates, but of true acquirers at any moment in time in our market tends to be declining a little bit. So, you know, the deals that we're seeing get done tend to be all kind of within a pretty tight range of pricing transparency, but that's just where the sellers and buyers come together. I think the supply and the demand in the market has become a bit more favorable to the acquirers.
Okay. Really, all of my other questions have been answered by everyone else. So thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
Well, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for visiting with us this morning. We appreciate your continued interest in the company and look forward to talking with you after the conclusion of the first quarter.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.